time to rethink, renew, and reimagine retirement. Welcome to Retire Repurposed. This podcast is dedicated to help people transition into fulfilling and purposeful retirements. Retirement is a big life change. In fact, the two most dangerous years of a person's life are the year they were born and the year they retire. We believe that retirement is not the end, rather the beginning of what could be the most impactful season of a person's life. So don't retire, become repurposed. Well, I'm your host, Jared Sebest. I'm the co-founder of Retire Repurposed alongside Ben Tages. Thank you so much for joining us today. Maybe you're listening to us on the radio. Maybe you found us online. Regardless, if you would just take a moment, head over to iTunes, find our podcast, click subscribe, and better yet, just leave us a quick positive rating and review. If you would just take a moment and do that, we would appreciate that so much. Now, this podcast, it is about retirement. But it's not about the money side. It's about the non-financial parts of retirement, which many times can be even more challenging than the financial. Few people can just flip the switch from working a career 30, 40, maybe 50 plus years, shutting it off, retiring on a Saturday without methodical steps into living what we call a repurposed retirement. If you're looking for more for your life and your retirement, then you have come to the right place. Well, on this episode, we continue our series on retirement stories with Dennis Benson. At 73 years old, Dennis is still busy tuning pianos, photographing community events, and playing music. A few years ago, he was given a woodworking lathe, and using YouTube videos, Dennis learned to make conducting batons and other handmade wood creations. In this podcast, Dennis explains the importance of always learning new things and how having a lazy boy is good, but being addicted to it is bad. Enjoy this episode. A lot of people around the community know you as a photographer, as a piano tuner, but you do more than that as well.
I direct the community band in the summer. I play the rest of the year. We have our community band has a fall and spring season, so I'm a trombone player at that point.
Okay.
But I do direct it in the summer.
Nice.
So that's really a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I photograph a lot of the events. I'm kind of gotten to be known as the event photographer.
100%.
There's lots of photographers around the area that are fabulous at what they do. And that's kind of my niche.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've never been to a community event without seeing you there.
Yeah, that's kind of how it works. Yeah. You know, I do a few weddings and seniors once in a while, but that's not a big part of what I do.
Right. But on top of that, the photography, you do web design.
I do less of that now. But yeah, I've done hundreds of websites.
That's great.
I started woodworking 4 years ago when I was a band director back in my earlier days at KMS. I decided when I retired, if that ever happened. That's another part of the conversation.
Right, we'll get to that part.
I wanted to make conducting batons for band directors.
Okay.
Because my daughter was at Bethel College, and her band director was the baton maker of ever.
And explain to us non-musical folks what a baton is.
A baton is what the director waves in the air to.
It's like the stick, the stick, so to speak.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when he gets mad, he bangs it on the stand.
Yeah, I remember that from my high school band.
Yeah, sure, yeah. I just thought that'd be super cool. So I always look for lathes and just so when I retire, I could do that.
Right.
Well, 4 years ago, I inherited a lathe from a friend of mine. And I thought, you know, I'm not retired, but I need to do this. So I went to YouTube and I looked up everything I could find about running a lathe and working with wood and a few videos on actually making batons.
Wow.
And now I have batons in 8 states and 2 foreign countries, and I'm just shipping off 2 more today to Puerto Rico.
That's awesome. And you're 73 years old, so if I do the math correctly, you inherited this lathe at 69-ish, right? That's awesome. And you went on YouTube. That's unexpected. I mean, that's not what society would view as a guy not 69 years old doing.
You don't expect a guy at 73 years old doing a website either.
That's exactly right. That's good for you. And you brought a piece here for the folks listening. Obviously, we can't see, but explain to folks what you brought here today.
Yeah, well, because I do batons, you can do other things with the lathe. And so I've decided to make other things. And I've made 100 different things now on the lathe. And many people around here have seen bits and pieces here and there. I brought a little chalice with me that's made from what we call salted wood. It's maple. And salted just means it's heavily decayed. So it's got dark streaks in it. But the reason I brought it is because when I first put this on the lathe, it was an ugly piece of wood. Mm. I mean, it was falling apart and it was decaying. And when you get it on the lathe, you start shaping it, put some finish on it, you find out that what's inside is really beautiful.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful piece. It looks like kind of a, what is it called exactly?
It's a chalice.
A chalice. So it looks like kind of a high-end cup. Yeah,
it's kind of a cup.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah. So that's kind of my, how I view people.
Yeah.
You look at the outside, you see all kinds of things on the outside, but when you really need to know what's inside.
Mm.
And that's where the beauty is most of the time in people.
You know, when I saw you at the last community event and asked you to be on the podcast, one of the things that you said is you said, I just love community. And that's very clear by just how you live and how you're out and about. Where did that come from? Talk about maybe, you know, how you were raised a little bit. You know, where can you trace that back?
You know, that's a great question.
For folks like, you know, like you who are your age, that just doesn't come up out of nowhere. Usually it's been there a long time. Can you think back to where that kind of started?
You know, I think what it is I'm really a giver. My dad, when we had his funeral, he was identified as a servant.
Hmm.
He didn't have anything big to do in the church, or he was a custodian. He was a servant.
And yeah.
I think that's kind of the heart that I have is, and that's, you have to be able to be with people and help people. And that's really community.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be what it is.
Right.
Beyond that, I don't really know. I just do it.
You mentioned your dad. Were you raised around here?
Grove City.
Okay, so Grove City, Minnesota. So yep. Small town, Minnesota. Yep. Farm kid?
My dad worked in an elevator. No, in town.
Okay, so you're a big city kid.
A little city kid, yeah. Yeah, my dad worked in an elevator when I was young, and then he moved to being a custodian at the high school.
Okay.
So that was where he spent it.
So you've got some siblings out there, some young, some old. You've had kind of a rough chapter. You lost a sibling at one point throughout your younger days as well.
Yeah, I had a brother, Jerome, who died when he was in his 30s.
Mm.
So that was tough. But I still have a brother, Art.
Yep.
Many people around here know and love Art.
100%. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. If you live in West Central Minnesota, you know Sound Image and your brother, Art, who's owned that forever and ever.
Yep.
So that's your brother. And I just finally put that together just in the last couple of weeks as well.
And then I have a wonderful sister that lives in Kansas.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, obviously, when I look at your resume and what you're doing, you're into the arts, no pun intended to your brother, but you're into the arts, obviously musical. Talk about that. Where did that come from? Did that start when you were a kid?
You know, when I was in high school, I was in all of the music activities. You know, I got the biggest music award that there was.
Yeah.
I was also an athlete, so I was the most valuable athlete. So it's a small school. You can do that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, nowadays that really doesn't work in a bigger school especially.
Yeah.
But I think it gave me a well-rounded view of life.
Mm.
But I just loved music. When I went to college, I majored in music. I have an education degree in teaching music.
Yeah.
So I was a band director for the early part of my career.
Hmm.
Taught at KMS and then a little bit at the University of Minnesota Morris. And then I went on the service, played a trombone in Germany for a couple of years.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that.
Yeah. My wife worked in the entertainment center, and they found out I was a piano tuner, so they had me ship my tools over, and so I tuned pianos in Europe for that couple of years.
What time frame was that?
That was in the early 70s.
Okay. What was the political climate at that time?
Well, it was, the Vietnam War was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't there. Obviously, I was in Germany.
Right.
But the Vietnam War was happening then.
What did you learn being a small town Minnesota kid living overseas? That had to have been quite a experience.
It was an experience being in the Army.
Right.
And overseas was fabulous. Our daughter was born there. Her name is Heidi.
Sure.
So I would go back in a heartbeat to visit.
Yeah.
You know, live there. Like it here in Wilmer.
That's interesting. Yeah. But as you're talking here, I'm just kind of building your life story, and I think that's one thing that's important for retirees, and it's certainly something that we encourage people to do. That's why it's interesting to walk through this storyline. You have three kids now, nine grandkids. Get us up to kind of where you are today.
Well, yeah, my daughter is a book editor, so she edits books that people write. She's very, very good at it.
Yeah.
She has three kids. She has a daughter who's a cello performance major at the University of Southern California, one of the best 21-year-old cellist in the country.
You're
fabulous.
Oh.
And then she has twin boys that are 16 soccer, tennis.
Yeah.
And they live in the cities, Maple Grove.
They're following in your footsteps, kind of.
Somewhat.
Yeah. How do you view that? Yeah. How would your daughter view you and the music that's kind of followed and the arts, you know, that are the art gene, so to speak, is kind of followed? How would she explain that in your words?
Well, she's just happy to have been grown up with that appreciation.
Yeah. Right.
And her daughter, Madeline, you know, the cello player, you know, is taking it to such a whole different level of performance. Mm. But she also looks back at the and appreciates the value of music. And, you know, when you're talking about retirement, you know, I've thought for a long time that there are people who retire black and white. They work a job, boom, retirement starts there, boom. Then they have to figure out what to do.
Right.
If they have hobbies and things, you know, that's fine. If they don't, they're in trouble.
Yep.
But it's so different for me. That's why I feel a little funny even being here.
Right.
Because when COVID hit, I talked to you about this a little bit.
Yeah.
When COVID hit, I didn't tune for a couple months because I couldn't do it from home.
Right.
The governor said, don't do it if you can't work from home. And so I didn't. Well, then I figured out how to do it safely, and I've been doing it ever since. Mm. But during that month and a half or 2 months, I told my wife, if this is what retirement's like, I don't want it.
That's interesting.
I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
So I don't plan to retire unless physically I have to.
Yeah.
But I'm in such a position with my job as a piano tuner and my hobbies that I can basically form my life.
It's great.
As I want to.
What's interesting, just even setting up this time frame to even record this interview, I had to work around your schedule a little bit because your day-to-day is pretty busy. I think you're off to a small town down the road.
I'm off to Montevideo today for right five pianos in the school.
Right after we get done recording. Right. So, I mean, you arguably you're busier than I am. You know, just talk about that conundrum a little bit because, you know, I've said on previous shows, you know, I've interviewed folks, gentlemen and gals that have been your age, and you're really not acting your age. You know what I mean? Do you feel like that? I mean, and
absolutely,
I
feel like that.
But here's the thing about you, Dennis. I almost, even as you're describing your life and how you view retirement, you're almost doing it a little bit apologetically. Like, you know what I mean? Because there's been this template that you're supposed to follow and you're not following it. And so I can almost kind of see it in your demeanor. You're almost a little bit apologetic for it. And you shouldn't be. I mean, the fact that you haven't had this typical black and white retirement where you have a retirement day, you're just mm-hmm. continuing to serve just like your dad did. I mean, it's phenomenal. It's great. That's why we all wanted to have you on the show. But do you feel like a social pressure from your peers almost that you're not acting the way that you, quote, should be acting?
I feel it from customers, actually. Hmm. Are you still tuning? Because they expect that at some point I'm just not going to be doing it anymore.
Right.
But then there are many people who say, don't ever quit.
Exactly.
Who else is going to do this? Because there's not a lot of piano tuners around.
Yeah. And how long have you been doing it?
55 years.
That's exactly right. You know, so like, would you rather have the dentist tune your piano who's been doing it for a half a century?
Yeah.
Or, you know, somebody else?
Yeah. So there's definitely a need there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a conundrum.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would challenge you, and certainly we've been challenging our listeners on this podcast, don't deny that. In fact, you made a comment right before we recorded. You said, I feel a little strange that I'm being asked to be on this podcast. I don't feel I have a lot to offer. And we feel like that's a mind shift that we are taking a hold of through this platform and podcast. We're trying to inspire people like you that you do have a lot to offer. Mm-hmm. You've traveled the world. You've done things. You know, you've literally have mastered the art of tuning a piano, and that's just one of the things on your resume. You know what I mean? There's a lot of value in that. So I mean, you seem to be a healthy guy. I mean, 73 years old. That's 50 years ago that was considered old.
Right.
Today, not so much. What else do you want to master? You've talked about woodworking. You talked about all the other things you're dabbling in.
You know, I don't even know what comes next. I'm loving what I do.
Yeah.
I love to learn. You know, my kids are that way too. They love to learn.
Yeah.
And I love to learn new things, and that's where the lathing kind of comes in.
What was it like going on YouTube and learning a new skill at 70 years old? That like?
Being a web designer, you know, I've not been afraid of the computer.
Okay.
Like some people in their 70s are afraid to even turn on the computer
or
whatever. So, you know, I didn't have any hesitation that way.
Yeah.
But, boy, when I started looking for things to learn from, mm-hmm. and honestly, most of the videos that I watched to learn from were people who made other things.
Sure.
Pen makers, that sort of thing. You know, you start to accumulate that knowledge, and then I got the, I figured out how to run this lathe. I didn't even know how to turn it on at first.
Right.
And then you start accumulating your knowledge, and, you know, now I wouldn't call myself a master lather, but I know a whole lot more now than I did when I started.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What do you see in other people your age that that's missing? Because I would have to assume you've seen your peers and friends maybe just kind of shut it off, you know, and you've admitted there's a little bit of pressure even from customers, but what is it about you that you are doing that others are not doing? Do you feel 73 when you look in the mirror?
No.
Do you consider yourself 73?
No, I don't even know how old 73 is.
how old do you feel?
I'm 99. I still feel like I'm in my 50s somewhere.
That's right. Yeah.
Really.
You know, I have found that interesting about people I've talked to, even myself. I'm 40 at the time of this recording. I'm 42. I feel like I'm about 28. And my wife's grandma died a couple of years ago. She died, I think, in 94. But she always said she always felt about 60 or 70. I think there's something in the human spirit that, like, always feels about 20 to 30 years younger. I think that's
for
a good thing,
people,
though. That's true. That's a good point. That's a good point.
For some people, they're 60 and they feel like they're 80.
But I think also, too, when people buy into that, I think we would call that ageism, so to speak, where they've kind of bought this lie that once you reach a certain age, you have to start acting like it.
Right.
What is it? What's the missing link? You have fought it and are not choosing to live that, but that there's other people that are your exact age that are choosing to, like, say, well, I'm 73 and so I'm going to start acting like it. What's that missing link?
You know, I think it's that they just have died with losing interest to do new things or to learn new things.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of settled into, this is my spot in life right now, and this is my lazy boy, and that's all I'm doing.
Yeah.
There's way more to life than that.
Well, I think even going back to just your heart, and even going back to what you, the words you used to describe your dad as a servant, well, you're following in those footsteps. And so instead of just kind of finding the lazy boy and calling it quits, like I said, that you're probably busier than I am, and you get out way more than I do. That's got to just be exciting to the human spirit to keep you going. Why would you want to give that up?
Maybe it's ADHD. I'm not really sure. No, it's not that.
But even, you know, and I'm kind of like psychoanalyzing you here, so I apologize. But, you know, during coronavirus, when you couldn't go out, your comment to your wife was, you know, if this is retirement, I don't want anything to do with it. I mean, that took a lot of self-awareness to,
you know,
to see
also
that.
Shut down a lot of other things that I did.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't do any photography during that time. There's a lot of things I didn't do. So it really wasn't just the piano tuning. It was not doing anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's you don't want to do that.
No. No.
What do you, you know, you're 73. What do you see when you look at you retire? I would have to assume you don't consider yourself retired right now. Certainly. You know, you work on your own terms. You're able to kind of take the best of the best. That's what I love about you as well. You said, these are the things I love to do. I'm good at them. They get me excited. And now I can create my life just doing the best of the best. What do you see yourself as you go through your 70s into your 80s? What does that look like for you?
You know, my favorite piano tuner in the whole United States died just a couple of years ago. And he tuned until he was 92. Now, I'm not saying I want to go that long.
Right.
Because that's a little scary. But, I mean, he was Virgil Smith, he was down in Texas. He was a fabulous tuner. I've stayed away from COVID. That's been a good thing.
Wait, Eve, let's just touch on that for a second. How do you think that even with the introduction of coronavirus and what's happened in our world the last year and a half or 2 years, do you think that that's been a good thing for retirees or a bad thing? Has it been?
It's been a bad thing for everybody.
Yeah.
It's just not retirees, I don't think. You know, it's just put a scary cover over life.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things we don't know, and we're not necessarily being told the truth on,
right.
You know, where do you find the truth? And it's just, you know, you try to navigate that whole thing besides life.
Yeah.
You know, and so much of what we know about coronavirus depends on what TV station we watch.
100%.
And that's scary.
Yeah. Well, I think you just mentioned the word right there. It's scary. It's fearful. I think that for you, there was some aspects where it was good because it showed you the way I don't want to live, and probably inspired you to do the things that you're doing more so
well,
now.
Well, also when I try to filter out what's real about coronavirus and that sort of thing, it made me think I can still live. Mm. I don't need to shut down.
That's right. That's right.
And so I didn't.
I'm part of a small group, and one of the things that keeps coming up in our small group is, what would my life look like if I wasn't afraid? And I think what you're saying is, maybe to a lot of retirees in that quote-unquote age bracket, coronavirus really put a layer of fear on them. And almost, and I think the enemy, not to turn this hyper-spiritual, but I think one of the enemy's biggest tools is fear. If he can inject fear into people, he will prevent them from rising up to their full calling. And I'm sure for your age bracket, that was a very scary thing, and probably still is to this day.
Yeah, I live at Independence Place, which is all seniors. Mm. And, you know, we had to navigate that. And, yeah, it is. There's a sense of fear involved, for sure.
What do you want your legacy to be? We got just a couple minutes left here. You know, I mean, you're a healthy guy. You're probably going to live another 30 or 40 years. And, you know, when you fast forward the tape and they think of Dennis Benson back in West Central Minnesota, what do you want them to say?
You know, I saw a meme on Facebook, and I hate memes on Facebook, but this one. And it said, when I die, I want people to remember my smile.
Mm.
They could remember that I was a great piano tuner or a fabulous wood guy or whatever. That's not going to last very long.
I think that's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last question here. Speak to people your age, you know, 65 to maybe, you know, 75 and maybe beyond. What do you know about life that they could start doing right now? What's a mind shift that maybe they could look at their own life and other people maybe a little bit differently to make sure that they don't end up on the lazy boy for the next 10 or 15 years?
Well, I would say if you're not going to church, find a good church. Mm. Because there needs to be that spiritual component in your life. It's huge in mine. We haven't talked about it much, but it is.
Absolutely.
And just don't stop learning.
Mm.
Man, the lazy boy is a wonderful chair. I have one and I love it, but don't get too addicted to it.
Dennis, I appreciate it so much. Before I let you go, where's a place that people can find more about you and maybe all the things you're involved in?
If you go to DennisBenson.com, that's probably the best place. You can also funnel off into my Facebook page that way, or my Bataan website. I have a website for that too, but you can all get there through DennisBenson.com. If you need a piano tuning, you can go there as well.
Amen to that. Well, I appreciate the time today. You're a good man, and you're exactly what we're trying to inspire people to be. So well done.
Thanks.
Well, I sure hope you enjoyed this conversation with Dennis Benson. I love how he explained his experience with, quote, retirement compared to someone that has had the more typical black and white retirement. You know, he's never really slowed down, but instead he's reshaped the way that he works, and more importantly, he's renewed the way that he adds value. One of the characteristics of being repurposed is not just maintaining, but rather growing, always learning new things. And while rest and relaxation in the lazy boy can be a good thing, according to Dennis, we can be addicted to it. Instead, we should be looking for new ways to learn and to grow. Dennis, we appreciate you sharing your story. Again, for more information on Dennis's story and his woodworking hobby, go to DennisBenson.com. Do you have a great story? I'd like to hear from you. Email me at jared@retirerepurpose.com. That's jared@retirerepurpose.com. We'd love to hear about it and maybe have the opportunity to share your story on the air. And hey, one more thing before I let you go. I'm excited to announce that Repurpose University is finally here. Repurpose U is a 5-lesson video-based course taught by Ben Tages and myself, and is designed to bridge the gap between your working years into a purposeful and impactful retirement. Join Ben Tages and myself for this online launch party as we roll out the brand new Retire Repurpose platform, including the long-awaited Repurpose U. It's on Thursday, September 9th at noon Central Time. We're going to be streaming this party live on Facebook Live. For more information, go to the Tages Financial Group Facebook page to like and set up a reminder. We're going to have free giveaways and discounts to enroll in Repurpose U. In the meantime, I encourage you to head over to our brand new website, retirerepurposed.com. There's ways to preview Repurposed You and to sign up for Repurposed Retirement Tips. Until next time, I'm Jared Sebesta. Remember, don't retire, become repurposed. We'll see you then. It's time to rethink, renew, and reimagine retirement. Hey everybody, Jared Sebesta here, host of Retire Repurposed. Now, this podcast is about the non-financial parts of retirement, which many times can be even more challenging than the financial. We believe retirement is not the end, rather the beginning of what could be the most impactful, purposeful, and fulfilling season of a person's life. So don't retire. Become repurposed. To listen now, search Retire Repurposed on your favorite podcast platform, Senior Resource, or Life Audio.